Welcome to today's episode of Joe's Hot Takes, where we dive into the issues that shape our society. I'm Joe, and today we're going to talk about a topic that has sparked debate for decades, immigration. Why do people want to come to the U.S.? How are our policies in comparison to other countries? And is there a better way to approach immigration reform? Well, let's break it down. Today, we just want to talk about why do people want to immigrate here and how are our policies the same or different from our bordering countries of Canada and Mexico? And let's offer a proposal for a structured immigration pathway. It's an interesting concept. Okay, so let's jump into segment one. Why do people want to come to the U.S.? Well, economic opportunity. I think that's one of the big things. I know we hear about political asylum, and we'll talk about that. But I think the number one reason that people want to come here is for the economic opportunity. People know that they can come here, earn a good living, and build a really better life for them and their families than they maybe can in some of these other countries. A lot of these countries, there's just no economy. They're just struggling day to day to day. That's why I think you see so much drug activity in places like Mexico or in Afghanistan, the Middle East, where you're seeing poppy seeds grown and heroin distributed. So there's a lot of economic opportunity here, and people see it. People want that American dream, and who can blame them for that? I think we all want that. Another thing is the political stability. I think people see the stability that we have here. We have a very stable government. We have a very strong defense for our country. Our country is very well defended. And our politics, we can all argue about politics this way and that way, but overall across the board, I would challenge you to find a place in this world where you have not only the economic opportunity, but the political stability that you see here in the U.S. The other thing that we have to offer, I think, is better education and healthcare. Those are definitely some factors. Now, I know there's always discussions about education and healthcare and this and that, but let's just go back and just try to draw a line across the horizon here and have a level line to look at. When you add in economic opportunity, political stability, access to better education, healthcare, I think it's hard, again, to find another country where you can find all of these things in alignment that really give us the opportunity to grow and expand. So, there's some real world examples out there of individuals seeking that better life, and it comes right from my family. My father was a first generation U.S. citizen. He was born in Cleveland, Ohio, many, many years ago. He was born in Cleveland, Ohio. His mother and father came to the U.S. from Sicily. They came over on the boat. They landed in New York. They signed into the book and became Americans. And it was interesting because my father used to say that, and he's passed, my father used to say, when we got to America, he was born here, but when his family got to America, his father said, we will no longer speak Italian. We will speak English. We're in America, we're going to speak English. So unfortunately, our family lost our language, but that was kind of the mindset back in those days. You come into America, you learn English, you scrap your old ways, you learn the new ways. I don't know if I definitely agree with that. I think that you have to hold on to your old traditions. You have to hold on to your culture that where you came from. And definitely, I'm a strong believer in you hold on to your language. Be it Italian or Spanish or whatever country you came from, you need to hold on to that language as well. That's my beliefs. But they came here and they wanted a better life, and they found it. My grandfather was very successful with interior design. And back in those days, they were doing a lot of plaster work and wallpapering and things like that. So that's where he thrived and made his better life for his family. So, all right. So let's compare this to Canada and Mexico. What are their immigration policies like? All right. Well, for example, Canada requires proof of income. So you can't just show up at the border of Canada and say, hey, I just want to be a Canadian citizen now. I want to move in. I'm here. When I get there, I'll figure it out. That won't work. You need to show proof of income, employment, or some type of means of support. You're not welcome to just come into their country just as a freelance. Here I am, and I'll figure it out. Won't work. Let's look at Mexico. Mexico enforces visa requirements and economic stability for just even for long-term stays. We're not even talking about actually making Mexico your place to live. But you have to be able to show them that, yes, I have long-term economic stability. I have money coming in. I can live here and I can take care of myself. So you're not getting into Canada or Mexico if you don't show economic stability and means of support and a way to survive there. So why doesn't the U.S. have a similar policy in place? Or do we? I think we do. However, what we're seeing is a lot of people are trying to come into the country illegally. Now, when you come in through legal measures, then yes, we expect you here to do the same, be a viable member of society. However, when you illegally cross the border, if you illegally cross into Mexico or illegally cross into Canada, there's no discussion. You are immediately detained and deported. You're done. You're out. Here in the U.S., we're a little more welcoming, or we have been in the past. So the pathway to citizenship in the U.S. is difficult. I get it. It's a long, drawn-out, governmental red tape situation. But we have to go somewhere. We have to start somewhere and have some sort of policy. So let me jump into segment number two, which is a proposal for immigration reform. Okay, so here's an idea. You ready for this? Temporary residency program, but it has structured requirements. So first thing, I show up at the border. I'm coming from another country. I show up at the border of the United States. The first thing I'm going to need to do is complete an application. And that's going to detail either my income source or my trade. How am I going to come to the United States and earn money? How am I going to be able to take care of myself? So in this application, I will detail either I'm coming with income or I have a trade. Next thing, I'm going to be fingerprinted. So we're going to fingerprint, we're going to photograph, and we're going to provide a DNA sample. So everybody that comes to that border, once they fill out that application, they get fingerprinted, they get photographed, they provide a DNA sample. Now, excuse me, in return, the U.S. government will now issue that person an immigration number. That immigration number will be used in a very similar manner as a Social Security number would for a U.S. citizen. This will track employment, it'll track tax contributions, it'll track criminal history and every other type of tracking database that's available in the U.S. That number will be inputted in there, just like your driver's license number, just like your Social Security number, okay? So now, what I think we do is we have to say, how do we keep the bad people out and let the good people in? All right, so let's talk about that. I would propose a probationary period of 3 to 5 years, okay? And then there's conditions. So you got a 3 to 5 year probationary period, and here's your conditions. If you are arrested for 3 or more misdemeanors, you are automatically revoked, your number's revoked, you're deported. If you are convicted of a felony, no questions asked, it's immediate deportation. And the other part of this is you must maintain employment, you must pay taxes, and you must contribute to the community to qualify for citizenship. So you're here for 3 to 5. You've never been arrested. You've never been convicted of a felony. You have gainful employment. You're paying your taxes. You're contributing. You're part of your community. Okay? That temporary residency now can be converted. You will get an actual social security number and become a U.S. citizen through those channels. I think it's a great opportunity for us to be able to track. Okay, so let's jump into segment number 3 now. Why would this not work? What are the things that are gonna, what are the roadblocks here? So, one, there may be a lack of employment opportunities for a lot of folks that are coming here from other countries. They might not have the skill sets that are required to land those good employment opportunities that are out here in the U.S. So that could be certainly a roadblock for them. The other issue that's glaringly obvious is the language barriers. So a lot of folks come here, they don't really speak good English, or maybe they don't speak English at all, and they try to survive. It's difficult. It's very difficult. And I'm going to share with you a personal side. We have a home in Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. All Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens and carry U.S. passports. However, Puerto Rico is a Spanish-speaking country, so their primary language is Spanish. Now, most people and a lot of people in Puerto Rico are bilingual, thankfully, because I really am not. So I show up in Puerto Rico and I decide I want to live here. I want a house here. I want to buy a house. I want to buy a vehicle. I need to open a bank account. I have a lot of things that I need to do. It's difficult when you don't speak the language of that country. It was very, very difficult for me. I had to crash course, start learning Spanish. Thankfully, like I said, many, many people in Puerto Rico speak English as well. So they're all, a lot of those folks are bilingual. So that was very helpful. But one thing that I learned is when I would be trying to muddle through a conversation and trying to use a little Spanish and mix in a little English, and what do we call that, Spanglish, to try to get through something, it was interesting how a lot of times the person I was talking to would say, "It's okay, we can speak in English." And I would say, "Well, I appreciate that. Can we try to do this in Spanish? And can you help me through it? Because I really need to learn my Spanish." And oh my gosh, the warmth that you receive from showing people, your language is important to me. I want to learn your language because I'm here. So that goes, now you flip that script and these folks are, you know, coming from other countries to the U.S. They do need to learn English, because if you want to survive here, you're really going to have to learn to speak English. However, don't lose your language. Keep your language as well. Anyway, I digress. Another issue might be the security risks that we're concerned about today. What if people misuse this system? So today we're concerned about security risks. We're concerned about people who are getting across the border with bad intentions, bad actors that are coming in, maybe terrorist ties or drug cartels, things like that. But I would hope that by going back into segment 2 and in that original proposal, fingerprinting, photographing, DNA, all of these things are very, very trackable through criminal databases here in the U.S. So if we do have a bad actor, hopefully we're going to be able to find them, root them out, get them back to their country of origin. But these are all concerns that we have right now with our current immigration system. So these are all real concerns that we have today anyway. So maybe it's worth it to try something new. So let's jump into segment 4. And segment 4's question is, how or why could this work? So, counter arguments that are in favor of this system. Number one, we're vetting people. They're vetted before entry. That ensures applicants are accounted for. Next part, tracking. Tracking through an immigration number. This links the applicant to all of their employment, if they go get a driver's license in the state that they're in, if they buy property, all of these things will be tied back into that immigration number. And eventually, if they are successful, it'll be tied into their social security number that they're issued. A structured system also allows law enforcement to track and remove bad actors. And I just talked about that, right? So we have these systems in place here in the U.S. where we can track bad actors. So we can catch them. We're doing it right now. I see it every day on the news. We are rooting out these bad people and getting them sent back to their country of origin. So I believe that this is a viable possibility. Why we're not doing something like this already, I don't know. Maybe it's too simple. Maybe it's so far-fetched that it just won't work. Maybe I'm that naive. I'm not sure. I'm hoping that I'm not. So anyway, well, thanks for listening to that. So let me just summarize here a few points. And I want to encourage this discussion. So could this be a step toward true immigration reform? With today's technology and resources, shouldn't we be able to build a more effective system? I think this might be a way to do it. So here's your call to action. Let me know what you think. Join the conversation. Leave a comment. And, thanks for listening. And like I always say, we'll see you next time. But until then, stay curious.